Welcome
Log
to
Talk
W.
Radio.
Welcome to WPR Rebuttal, covering the sides of the story missed by Wisconsin Public Radio, bringing you narratives the UW System Board of Regents won't allow, shedding light on perspectives the owners of WPR don't want you to hear. Our call number is 929-477-3965. I'm your host, Senator JPO, bringing you rebuttals to the official WPR narratives. As a one-person operation, I rely upon logic and facts to counter the institutional hegemony of Wisconsin Public Radio as well of its owners, the UW System Board of Regents. This week's roundup of rebuttals covers the faculty senates of UW-Madison and Samara campuses voting no confidence in UW System President Raymond Cross. And we also cover the emergent legitimation crisis of the UW System and some related issues. So without any further ado, if you've been reading WPR website or listening to a radio show or reading Wisconsin State Journal, chances are you've heard about UW-Madison Faculty Senate voting no confidence in UW System President Ray Cross. And this is breaking news. According to the La Crosse Tribune, the UW La Crosse Faculty Senate has also voted no confidence in Raymond Cross. They joined the UW-Madison faculty in doing so, and it really shows Mr. Cross is ruffling some feathers. Now, I happen to support the UW president in this matter. It's a rare occasion on which I find myself on the same side of the battle line as Ray, but I hope he beats back the faculty's attempted no-confidence vote at our campuses, because all things considered, Mr. Cross is correct when he advises faculty to refrain from whining. Now, that reminds me of a statement from an op-ed published in the Wisconsin State Journal about a year ago, where a writer said, "Whining won't budge the budget this biennium." Oh, what did he say? Oh, the full quotation from the op-ed was, "Regressing to the default UW lobbying tactics, i.e. whining and complaining to get a handout, simply won't budge the budget this biennium." That's a tongue twister. But for the sake of a soundbite, I shortened it to, "Whining won't budge the budget this biennium." So take it for what you will. And truth is, now that this progress has been made and there's a climate that favors some retrenchment faculty privileges, and now that we have that zeitgeist, neither will whining bring back tenure nor the various bargaining privileges to which faculty have become accustomed. These are not rights, but privileges, the same as employment is a privilege and not a right. Because if you go and ask any human resources manager whether employment is a right or whether it's a privilege, vast majority of them will say it is a privilege. There's no collective bargaining your way into a job. That's only if you manage to join the organization's payroll, and if you manage to get enough of your coworkers to sign a union card, and again, that's only for your department. That's only for your line of business, for your functioning. I mean, if you go and look at the job classification codes throughout the UW system, not everyone is unionized, like the student workers, the limited-term employees. None of those are unionized, but I imagine they could unionize, but it would just be difficult to do so because of high turnover. Kind of like how you don't see migrant workers unionizing. I certainly didn't see it when I was corn shelling as part of an H2A recruitment. And my whole point with the loss of faculty bargaining, well, they didn't lose them all, but the retrenchment of faculty bargaining rights. Presages the potential replacement of tenured faculty with adjuncts, which adjuncts are more or less temps. I'll put it that way. They don't necessarily go through a staffing agency. They apply direct And the campus at which they are adjunct faculty pays their compensation, the workers' compensation, and they, in some cases, they're eligible for health care benefits, but seeing as adjunct by its very nature is limited term employment, if adjunct faculty are not eligible for unemployment insurance benefits, unfortunately. But that's the same situation for student workers. So one would think adjunct faculty would help get on board with the movement to allow student worker unemployment insurance benefits, but to each their own. So no, they don't really care. Although, you know, they care, well, not necessarily as much about their tenured faculty losing their rights, because again, there is some jealousy and, you know, emotional thinking involved. Kind of like how human resource people tend to think with their hearts instead of their heads sometimes, but everyone's guilty of that at some point. But the whole point in doing a 360 review of the issue is to identify why the faculty losing their, you know, some of their rights, obviously not all, but some of the bargaining rights, such as tenure, making them impervious to being fired. I mean, everyone needs to stay on top of their game, and everyone needs to, you know, if they're at a teaching institution, they have to be mindful to teach the students and not just shut themselves away in research. Now, when they become an emeritus or an emerita or an emeriti, plural, then they can shut themselves away in their offices and just spend all day crawling through the EBSCOhost and all these other databases of scholarly journal articles. They can do that once they're semi-retired. But until then, they should be pulling their weight and helping the university to produce knowledge transfer, not just knowledge creation, but knowledge transfer, okay? Because that's what, you know, these state universities are supposed to be about, knowledge transfer. And that brings me to the problem of over-education, because, I mean, we have the temp economy, as mentioned last podcast, is, you know, is 2% of workforce is not just contingent labor, but specifically 2% of the American workforce is temping through staffing agencies. And that doesn't even include all those who are limited term employees who are not going through an agency, but who are LTEs, as they're known in the staffing industry, or human resource people refer to these as LTEs. And, yeah, project employment is kind of like LTE, but technically within Wisconsin agencies, within the UW system, all those government agencies, LTE means 6 months or fewer of work, and the project employment is greater than 6 months, but fewer than 2 years. So between 6.001 and up to 24 months flat of work, that's project employment. So, you know, these that 2% statistic about the workforce being temporary labor as well, that doesn't even include adjunct faculty or the project employees or the LTEs. So that's why, you know, faculty need to see the writing on the wall. They need to help their students, and they need to help the rest of the sectors come up with just easier solutions to go and help people more readily transfer from one job to the other. So if they get fired because they did something stupid and they lost their faculty position, not adjunct, okay, but the formerly tenured faculty, the regulars, they lose some of their positions, such as through not even anything they did, but through like a layoff, right? Through a layoff because of declining enrollment. Oh, yeah, declining enrollment in itself. That's what they're really afraid about, more or less. So instead of addressing this, what I call the legitimation crisis of state universities and how students are warming up to the idea of, you know, they don't need the state university to go anywhere in life. Well, these faculty, without saying it, they are having these emergent fears of students ditching their programs. And when enough students ditch the programs, then faculty will be laid off. No matter how effectively they might teach, they'll be gone. So on the bright side, I mean, they can leave with a positive reference. And if they can get some other students to give them positive references, and all the better. But the fact is, they're just going to have to reinvent themselves if they cannot get another university to hire them. And, you know, like some of these, they might go and step down to, like, administrative positions. Like, they could be a program associate somewhere, or they could go into state government. And because a lot of state government people, you know, if they don't like it, tough to get a better position in the private sector in terms of a job security. So I'll put it this way. The people in state government tend to have rock-solid job security unless they're projects or LTEs. But if they're regulars, then they can pretty much just meet the minimum standards. And as long as they don't do anything stupid, they get like a verifiable complaint from like a fellow employee, then they're pretty much can be in it for life. So the bottom line is that if faculty miss their appointments for life, and they can go and compete for state of Wisconsin agency government jobs instead. So now, what about these no confidence votes, right? Well, you know, they had the UW-Madison one. They had one from UW-La Crosse, and it's kind of just symbolic because the people who can get rid of Ray Crosse are the regents. And the Board of Regents have been patiently working with Ray Crosse, and the Board of Regents have not even spoken of eliminating Ray or tossing him out or firing him or anything like that. And I believe that because very few regents actually come from ranks of faculty, and that's good. You know why? Because of checks and balances. Now, some regents come from private industry. A lot of them are lawyers. And say what you will, but that, I mean, this domination of lawmaking and rulemaking by lawyers, well, that's just, you know, another issue to be worked on another time. But for now, the divide and conquer strategy of, you know, getting the faculty to reconcile with reality about the students just are not going to feel sympathetic to the faculty until the students can have better job prospects themselves. And the faculty have been ignoring this legitimation crisis where the potential student consumers have realized that maybe the state university isn't the best return on investment. And for a lot of people, it is not. And it's not only true for liberal arts graduates where, you know, according to various numbers, where you look at the Federal Reserve numbers, they tend to be the most current. And if you look at some of the analyses by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, you know, the BLS numbers tend to look at college graduates of all ages, unfortunately, in their data table. So for age-specific data breakouts, the Federal Reserve branches, and there are 12 branches of the Federal Reserve in the United States, and each tends to go and have its quarterly reports, but like the Federal Reserve of New York, Federal Reserve of St. Louis, they've done different press releases about how there is a diminishing return and a diminishing probability of getting a wage premium from four-year college degrees and advanced college degrees generally. So in other words, sheltering academia won't necessarily help you. In fact, I've pretty much proven with my experience that it is a gamble, and you know where that gamble pays off is mostly dependent on your earlier work history. So to borrow a line from a famous LinkedIn writer, Joseph Oler, professional students don't get hired. And he made a LinkedIn article about that. And you can go and explore the reasons why he says so. But it more or less boils down to if you have a difficult time getting full-time employment, then no number of college degrees will change that. And so just save yourself the trouble. And if you go and look at what you can earn, okay, so let's presume you go through a staffing agency before you've been out of the workforce too long, right? So most staffing agencies, they want some type of work history within the prior 6 months. So obviously get yourself to a staffing agency before it's been even 1 month or 3 months, let alone six. So if you're out of high school, I mean, chances are a lot of your peers will be talking about which colleges they're going to and whatnot. But in a lot of those 5, 10 years from now, a lot of those friends or acquaintances, as they often are, not real friends, but just acquaintances who like to, they either don't talk about their career plans at all, or they just talk about university without having a real clear idea of for whom they'll work, right? Well, a lot of those people will just be ending up as part of the so-called boomerang generation where, no one can hire their educated carcass, so they just move back in with the relatives and they end up working the same types of jobs that you will have begun working by skipping college and just going to a staffing agency out of high school because again, you'll beat them to a punch. You'll have higher earnings because while they're losing earnings by paying tuition, getting student loan debt, and being shut out of the full-time workforce over at their big university, well, you will have already accrued several years of full-time work experience, whether that's through two part-time jobs or where you eventually get a full-time offer because staffing agencies are pretty good at providing full-time work. So if you've worked at like a food service establishment, Burger King, Dairy Queen, McDonald's, Subway, or whatever, especially Subway, because I find they tend to be really picky. I mean, I passed the math test with flying colors. I know that. But HR managers tend to hire with their hearts rather than with their heads when there's so many qualified people. So again, if you get into Subway, then that can really help you. Home Depot, they're really picky too. Any hardware store is very picky because I applied a lot of hardware stores in my youth and none of them ever interviewed me. I guess, Penny's True Value in West Bend, but the guy just, he and I didn't really hit it off. The owner was skeptical, which I kind of wonder why he even interviewed me, but gosh, that was like over 5 years ago when I already had earned my master's degree. But the whole point is that I think he was just doing that to make himself feel better. It's like, well, I gave him a chance and he didn't impress me during the interview, so screw him, but whatever. West Bend, Penny's Hardware, True Value, whatever you want to call it, they got a mention on the podcast, but it wasn't a favorable one. If anyone from Tenney's Hardware or if anyone from West Bend wants to call in and contest me on what I say, again, the number here is, where'd it go? I have it in my notes. What is our call-in number? It is 929-477-3965. And I should note that we have like 9 minutes left in the broadcast. So if you want to call, go ahead and call. What I mean by 9 minutes remain in this segment, because the reason I have to, this will automatically take a 3-4 minute break in about 9 minutes. Now, the 3 minute break is just a podcast segment automatically ending and then it's processing into audio file on the Blog Talk Radio server. And then it takes me another minute to dial back in and launch a new episode. So that's why there's maybe a 4 or 5 minute break in between segments. But really, I go through the material at a nice clip. So it's not like you lose any content. You don't. It's just if anything, it's kind of a challenge sometimes to drag it out because I allow time for callers. So when it's oh, there's the caller. Nice. Okay, so we have a caller from area code 441, and you're on the air. Hello, area 41. Welcome to WPR Rebuttal.
Hello. It's a different time on the phone than it is on the speaker, so we're a bit ahead of what's actually on online. I don't know if I missed something here, but I got you. I heard you talking about oh, now it's caught up to where we started talking. Okay, it's talking about getting a job at a hardware store and Subway's being picky, and I thought that was kind of strange because of that Subway. What types of things did you go in? I never applied to Subways or hardware stores, but what types of after the what did they go through? What did you have to go through to get the jobs through that? I never really thought of those places as selective.
Well, it's just you know, getting an interview in the first place, because I think now this is only a theory because human resources won't really say anything as to why they don't pick someone, right? But I think when I did the online application, then they were just looking, and they saw that I had spent so much time as a full-time student, and I just had these student jobs, but they thought that I had not progressed to a level of responsibility in terms of occupation that I should have been by that, you know, by the mid-20s. So I think there's a lot of I think the age discrimination doesn't necessarily wait until you're like, you know, middle age. I think a lot of it comes in, you know, when you hit your early 20s, because everyone really expects you to have something, you know, going on, or at least expects you to be a supervisor somewhere by that age. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I've seen people who worked in maybe not Subways. I mean, you know, have been in different places, but people who start working in like Burger Kings when they're already kind of middle age and stuff, you know, people come out of prison and whatever. And I know one guy who's an alcoholic who'd been in trouble with the law, got a job at McDonald's, which isn't Subways again. But he said that one of the reasons he got the job and not some students was because, you know, this he just was plain about how he was, you know what I'm saying? He wasn't trying to impress or anything like that. So he thought the students would think they were above the job, you know, or what they call overqualified, you know what I'm saying? So they didn't really want to work with the students there. They wanted to work with, you know, even though this guy had kind of a bad background and whatever, they hired him because they thought, you know, he wouldn't be above it, so he'd stay with it. But unfortunately, he relapsed into his alcoholism and stuff like that, and he lost it. But, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, hey, that reminds me of, you know, when I essentially I used to work at a Pizza Hut in West Bend. I mean, that's where I ended up working after that initial rough period. And then, you know, it's just one of those things where then that pizza closed. And then I was trying to get a transfer, but you know how it is. It's like I was one of the more junior people. So then there was McDonald's who was going to hire me because I applied for custodian. But unfortunately, it was not the McDonald's in that town. It was like McDonald's, oh, my gosh. It was actually one in Baraboo because I was moving around at the time. So it was like, well, Baraboo was about, you know, 35 miles from where I ended up living. So thankfully, though, I got a job closer than that before I actually went on the interview. Before I went on that interview for not the custodian, that's why I applied for it, but they wanted to interview me for like the just a regular crew employee, right? And then the staffing agency finally gave me a local job palletizing stuff, and then I finally got raises there at that palletizing job, and that's what, you know, bailed me out. So I guess, you know, Pizza Hut, it totally depends on a manager, but unfortunately, it looks like some of the Pizza Huts are going out of business.
Oh. Well, it's totally off time from the internet one. Okay. So that's
I just got to say, we have 4 minutes left, so is there anything else you want to say? Because Blog Talk Radio is going to automatically end this first segment. And then it'll be like a break of about 4 or 5 minutes, and then I'll restart with the news segment.
Okay.
And then you
well,
can call him again. So yeah.
No, yeah, I just was interested in that thing because you were actually talking about your actual work experience with that, with the why you thought
sure.
those guys were certain people were more picky than others. I know a lot of the things were here in the UK, they're talking about a lot of college graduates, especially those with science degrees, are the worst, more likely to be terrorists or supporters of terrorism. And I think it's because they have unrealistic expectations. Because, like, the ones, the poor Muslim immigrants in Bangladesh and stuff like, from Bangladesh and places like that, they never seem to become terrorists, right? But the ones, the really educated ones who have parents from Kuwait and whatever type of thing and have these huge expectations, they, the same with the criminals and whatever and stuff like that. They often come into the university graduates type of thing. So I wonder if it's like, I mean, like the job thing that you were talking about, where they're, they're getting shut out of the job market and stuff, and so they just got all this time on their hands and they start going crazy. I don't know.
Well, that is, you opened a new dimension to the conversation, and you said here in the UK, you're actually from across the pond.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
What 4-4 means. That's UK area code.
Wow.
That's the country code for UK.
Cool. Wow. Well, I got to look into that because that's actually, like I said, a whole new dimension to the issue here. And I think that's another good rationale why, universities have to just be more comprehensive. Maybe, in admitting people, they might require some type of prior work experience, too, to make sure a person can, cut it right in the real world.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Okay, well, thanks for talking to me today, and I look forward to hearing the rest of your program.
All right, thank you much.
Okay, bye then.
Bye. Okay, well, we had our first international caller. Oh, my goodness. A caller from the United Kingdom brought up a very poignant point, and that is that with the discrepancy, I guess, between the expectations that a lot of college graduates have, and just the economic realities of the frequencies of the, I guess, lower skilled or jobs that might be out there, and just something that I was thinking about too during my conversation. Is that a lot of semi-skilled jobs actually require like vocational technical training, but university grad will spend so much time on these other jobs that are supposed to be like professional level, but then they won't have the semi-skilled set when they graduate. So it's kind of like a polarization. I think a job polarization. And Blog Talk Radio is going to end this segment really shortly. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to take a quick break. And I'll come back in about, let's say within 5 minutes, okay? All right, thanks, and I'll be back soon.